That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
The best of 2024.
On FUBAR Radio.
Joining me in the studio was AJ and Curtis Pritchard. You probably heard of them already, but if not, they have been probably all over your TV screens, whether you've known it or not, for the past few years. And more importantly, they are the co-founders of the Fint app. All right, let me get you guys in the studio. Hello, how's it going?
Hello, hello.
Thank you very much. I love it. You've got a great studio here. I feel very comfy. The AC's on. I feel calm. What about you, Kurt?
Yeah, no, it's very nice here, actually. Thanks for having us on the show. It's good to be here. How are you?
Absolute pleasure. I'm doing great. Like I said, when the sun is shining, I am happy. Although I also quite like rain, so it's a bit of a weird thing to say. But that's got nothing to do with the topic of money that we're discussing.
I do agree with you, though. I do like a bit of rain.
It's a weird one, right? There's a word for it. We'll discuss it after the show, because everyone listening
weird.
Will be like, yeah, literally. I mean, rain when I'm indoors, by the way. Let's just clarify. Yeah. I don't like being outside in the rain. Anyway, we've got you in the studio, I think, because of what is on AJ's jumper right now.
We thought we'd come branded up. Yeah, it's always good.
That's quite smart. I feel like I need to have that. Oh, it's on your T-shirt
as
well. It is.
He's just compensating for something with the size of his, you see.
Comprende.
My logo, just clarify, everybody listening.
I was going to say, if anyone's listening, it's the word Fint written on both of their, well, T-shirt / jumper. I don't know how you're wearing a jumper in here. For me, it's hot. For you,
it's a bit nippy.
Cold.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Best to leave it to you guys to explain. What on earth is Fint?
So Fint is a financial investment app. For us, like, money is something that we kind of, most people know us for being on TV. They know our personalities. We were both professional dancers, or people don't know Kurt's a professional dancer, but he's been on Love Island.
Yeah.
And the one thing that's
You've
really
seen me
interesting.
In my underwear.
Yeah, let's not talk about that anymore. But the one thing that's always been really interesting is that for us, it's always been about, I am very OCD. I love numbers. I've always invested. I'm very good with money. Kurt, on the other hand, is very creative. He's got he's a bit more chaotic.
I love how you just use the word creative to say bad with money.
Yeah. he may be.
Cheers, AJ.
But it comes down to the point, if you're not educated in something, how is it your fault if you maybe don't understand how to manage your money? You're taught to get a job and earn money, but you're never taught to manage money. And Fint, at the end of the day, is a financial investment app. But what we do is we leverage the software from a larger fund, and within that fund you'd need $250,000 to invest, and we take that software and put in a mobile focused app called Fint, and you can do that from £50 a month. You choose one of three portfolios and your money is discretionally managed. So fundamentally, we can, not myself and Curtis, don't you worry, we are the beautiful faces and we are the PR and advertising and we bring everybody together, but the app is managed and the money can be moved discretionally throughout different portfolios.
By a professional. Yeah.
So the software itself has been working for over 10 years. So the great thing is, like, Fint is a new app, but we can show and fundamentally showcase that what your money would have done over the past 10 years through investing. And for us, we've just kind of been beta testing Fint, and we will be launching the next month. And our Q1 returns, simulated returns, I have to say that very clearly, have been over 10%. So we are very happy with the way that our portfolios are set up. Obviously, we are setting climate change for obviously our younger generation, disruptive technologies, because I absolutely love that market, and esports. Well, Curtis is just a hardcore gamer and loves it.
Yeah, so the whole idea of the app is we're trying to simplify everything down. We haven't tried to make it complicated. We've got, like AJ said, just the three portfolios, so you're not going to come on there and get confused and do all of this day trading and yada, yada, yada. Leave it to the professionals. Let's set some good habits over a long term of investing, and that's what we want to change people's mindsets, so they can use money in a wise way and they can start helping themselves in the future. Because I didn't know, but there is a stat out there that on some of these day trading accounts, it even says in their description, up to 80% of people that do day trading, because they don't know what they're doing, lose all their money or lose whatever money they're putting into it. We don't want that for people. We want people to be educated. We want to teach them the right way and the right things to do with their money.
It's just time. I think, like, even our professionals, like for me being professional dancers, people like see the nice thing at the end of the day, but they don't realize that compounding interest, in our case, I would train for 10 hours a day from the age of 12 before I even made it to Strictly, and being a world champion and European champion. Like, it's the time that nobody ever sees. It's that kind of, for us, start investing yesterday or today. Yeah. Don't do it tomorrow. And I love your content. Your content is somebody, yeah. I think I may have sent you a message on Instagram.
My language.
Like, I love it because it's about education and it's not ramming something down somebody's throat. It's about just like, it will help you in the future. And like, it helps.
And the thing is, so many people, because we've done loads of street filming, AJ and I, so we've asked so many people.
We love
people
going on the streets.
Oh my God, me yeah. too. I was there last week.
It's hilarious.
So good because you're getting actual people that want to invest, they want to do things with their life. But they don't know how to.
Well, you realise the blockers, don't yeah. you? You understand yeah. the actual reasons. When I speak to anyone within my audience, there's probably three key reasons why they yeah. don't invest. Yeah. Number one is they don't know enough.
Exactly.
Yes. Number two is they don't think they have enough. Mm-hmm. And number three is they think it's too risky.
But there are little tricks that you can do. Like most people do buy two coffees a day. No, I'll say, you know, buy one, make one at home. You save yourself 90 quid a month. Invest that 90 quid. Like, simple yeah. trick.
I mean, investing can be in anything, right? So I've invested in a beautiful coffee machine at home. And the amount that has saved me to, well,
100%.
Maybe not quite yet because I only bought it a year ago. But it's a long-term investment as long as it keeps working.
See, now, I bought a refurbished coffee machine. So now it was a quarter talking. Of the price. And I use recycled, well, it's actually...
Well, the odd pods ones.
Odd pods. So the broken coffee.
I thought he said he wasn't smart with
cheaper.
Money.
So yeah.
Hey, this is why he's come to Fint now. I've been educated him.
Well, I wasn't. And I'll tell you one of the biggest things that I've started to do now, which has helped me out, and it's made me feel so much more confident in my life because I know what my money's doing now, is write down what I spend.
Oh, that one is huge.
And even if it isn't every single day because you miss a couple of days, don't worry. It's not the end of the world. But try. It's... And just every day, write down what you're spending. And you will realise what you can and then can't do with your life, and it will put you in a real secure and happy and confident position.
It's so funny you said yeah. that, because every week I give a little money tip of the week. It's actually straight after you guys head out the studio. And I've got written here, figure out how much you spend each month. Can I tell you how important that is? Because everyone knows what's going in, no one knows what's going out. And I remember the moment I actually sat down, it was really scary because no one actually wants to look at that side of the expenses, right? You want to look at incoming, not outgoings. You look at it and you will probably end up saving at least £100, depending on your income.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
Oh, yeah.
Just because you're like, oh, have I still got that subscription going?
I didn't realise how many direct debits were coming out.
Honestly,
I don't even use that account.
Cancelled. But that's hugely important. Curtis, I want to ask you this question, because AJ made it very clear at the start that he was the money guy and you've brought yourself up to speed very quickly.
Yes, yes.
So how did that happen, especially with investing? Because I suppose that's something that maybe has come into your life now over the past few years.
Yeah.
How did you go and cross those boundaries of it being too risky, it being too expensive, and you not knowing enough, to now being the co-founder of an investing app and advocating so strongly for it?
It's very good, to be fair. So I've always known AJ's been great with money. So that has AJ's been great with money. So that has been on my mind. And I've loved to just spend left, right, and centre. I love a good night out. I love them two coffees out and about, this and that.
Kurt's that friend that always says yes to people. He's just a yes man.
No boundaries.
And I have been very fortunate enough to come into a situation from doing Love Island where perhaps a lump sum of money has come my way, or a little bit more money than beforehand. And I've realised that work comes and goes. So even if you get a lump sum of money in, unless you know what you're doing with your money, that lump sum of money will disappear unless you know what you're doing with it and how to use it wisely. And I've realised this. So this has made me want to work a lot more on myself and a lot more with money. And then I got myself a financial advisor because I realised I need to start learning these tips and tricks and the simple things. And I want to invest some money to create a better future for myself. So these are all the things that were going through my mind. I was like, hang on, I've got this lump sum of money coming in now, but I've got all these bills going out. I don't have a job now for 6 months. Oh, sugar, I haven't been smart with my money. I've spent a bit too much. I need to now somehow get that money back because that tax is coming in or this is happening. All of these things have made me realise that I need to start writing down, need to be smart, need to speak to people and not be afraid to speak to people.
In the UK, we are awful. We have that taboo. We don't like to talk about money. We don't like to...
Yeah.
there's just zero education, right? And PSHE doesn't count. I don't remember a single PSHE lesson. But apparently that's where finances are taught in school.
Oh, is it? Oh, it's
exactly.
Good to know that.
By the fact there's confusion in the room right now and just Curtis's face staring me
really?
Blankly.
I think it's just simple things. Like, for us, we go on these TV shows and we obviously now mental health is such a big point and there's a lot of kind of safety nets put in place to kind of really allow you to understand your feelings and other people's feelings and maybe where you stand. But you never get taught when you do these shows, especially like Love Island, like, okay, we need to set up a limited company now. You're going to pay yourself £12,000 a year. We're going to take dividends out the way the tax works, the corporation tax. This that you're expected to know something. I think it's really sad that throughout our industries itself, and I know through our entertainment side, we're expected to become the best that we are. But you can't be strong and secure in yourself, the one thing that I love to do is to say no. And it's really funny because I can say no to certain jobs because financially I know the position I'm in, yeah, and I maybe don't need to do that, or my time's a bit more valuable here because I've saved every single paycheck that I've ever done. Mm. And it's put me in a position where I understand what I can say yes to and say no to. And it's the best feeling ever sometimes.
Literally why this show was created in the first place. This lack of education, like you said, this taboo around topic. Yes. Brits hate talking about it. Do you know how many people I've asked in the street, like, you happy to share how much you earn? Go to America. They will tell you. They're not just going to tell you. They will open up their bank account and show you their latest pay slips. Yeah. They'll be like, oh, I'm happy. I can come to the UK. For some reason, I was like, why do you want to know?
We close ourselves in a box, don't we?
Just by doing that, you close the conversations down, which means that if there's no education and no conversation, there's no learning, full stop. Yeah. And I suppose that's the most damaging thing. Whereas if someone comes and listens to this, they watch your Instagram page now, or they watch my Instagram or anything on social media that talks about money, the whole hope there is just to spark interest. You're not going to learn financial education from a 30-second video. No. But it might knock over the first domino.
And it may just get, and that, exactly that. It may just give you that little tip and trick to just start off being financially more better with yourself.
All we want to do, like when we do the street film, a lot of the stuff is, A, sometimes it's more like, okay, this is the education, minimum wage, we're going to talk about this. But a lot of the time at the minute, the content that we create for our audience is to just make them think about money more. That's so. It. Like we were at UCL University and we're outside speaking to people, and these are studying these very intellectual degrees.
Some of the smartest people. Literally in the country. People.
And then we start to talk about money and finances, and it's like, no, I won't invest, or that's not for me, or will you consider it? No, I'm not going to consider it. So closed-minded in certain aspects, but I feel like it's not because they're closed-minded, because they quite clearly are open-minded. They live in central London, but they just sometimes are scared within them certain areas that are a bit darker to them. And it's when you see them open their eyes, they're like, oh, I understand that now. Or you give them statistics, physical graphs being like, look at this, proving it, then they're like, wow, that's amazing.
So open question to both of you.
Yes.
Before you ever started investing, I assume you had that barrier. You had a little bit of fear. You know that idea you mentioned before with day traders?
Yes.
I think it's even as high as 85% of day traders will lose money. Mm-hmm. And you better to start disclaiming that. Not going to shout out anyone in particular or any current news stories or anything going on. But how did you cross that barrier? How did you go from to, I'm going to make an investing app because I believe in it that much?
I've always been somebody that wants to take risks and wants to do things, and also wants to take calculated risks as well. This is the thing.
Well said.
This is what I like to do. And I like to sometimes throw myself out there. And I always say with your money, you should do things. There's so many tips and tricks that I like. There's the 50, 30, 20 thing, this and that. I try not to look at a 50, 30, 20. I go a 50, 30, 10, 10, which is invest 10, save 10, 20 on what you want, 50 on what you need.
Love
there
it.
You go. So it's things like that I started telling myself and trying to figure out. And I was like, okay, I can break the wall down to start investing because I'm not putting all of my money into it. Mm. I'm starting off with a little bit and seeing, is that working for me? Is this the right thing that I'm doing? And then as you start to see things grow in the correct way, I'm like, actually, this isn't too scary. This isn't too hard. And mainly, I know I'm leaving it to the professionals to do it for me.
Yeah. No, I think for me
that's
personally...
The thing. That's the really important part.
The end 100%. Part of what I said is the main thing about that. And that's why I wanted to build this app and make it discretionary managed. Because for the people that are scared to do it and they don't know what they're doing, leave it to the professionals.
Yeah,
because they do know what they're doing. Well, they know more than you anyway.
In most manners of life, we trust professionals. Like, you want to build a house, you get a builder. You know, something's wrong with your body, you go to the doctor.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, something happened to your money. Now I know what I'm doing. I can handle it. I've had zero lessons in it, but I know I can handle it.
I think when it comes down to certain things, even accountants, the irony is you sign that piece of paper at the end of the day, it's still on your head if something's gone wrong. Like, you can't rely on the accountant to read your payslip, understand what you are, your ins and outs are. You have to take management and ownership of what you've said to the government, this is the amount of money, and you still pay that tax bill at the end of the day. But when it comes down to becoming co-founders and working very closely with our business partner, Wes, it's kind of like, for me, it's the mental health side is really important, because when I get that first paycheck and making sure that I invested it from the beginning and understand it, like what my lifestyle is and what I want in the future, it's never been about like, okay, go buy expensive things and that. Well, I prefer to be calm and relaxed and knowing that now, if I hadn't saved all my money during Strictly and all these other amazing TV shows we've done, I would be really stressed right now mentally, and I'd be like, okay, I need to go and work, I need to do more of this. Yes, I love to work, but it's put us in an opportunity, myself, like now, being able to work and go on the streets and film. Technically, maybe not making money right now, but doing something that's kind of a legacy in the future. And that's the one thing for all three of us, myself, Curtis and Wes. It's about creating something that's bigger than our names. And what's better than actually creating something that helps thousands of people? It's such a rewarding thing. Like when I used to go on Strictly, I used to think of it as like a public service. I'm entertaining somebody for 90
and we
seconds.
And salute you.
And
thank
just like,
you, AJ.
I want people to forget about their problems. I know it's a really weird mentality.
No, it's a, you are right in a way, right? Because there
but
are
you never
people
made
that
the final.
There was no need for that. Well, he entertained them. He did a public service for the first few weeks.
I technically got more viewing hours because technically, if you don't make the final, you get It Takes Two show. So I had more hours per person.
Smart. Tactically.
Exactly, yeah.
Smart.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing from the start. He missed that step purposely on week four. Why Finn? Why Finn? There are so many options out there. And that's another thing that people hate.
Yeah.
They go, all right, I'm ready to start investing. Where do I do it? Yeah, because there are too many options. Therefore, you know, analysis paralysis, just not going to start. Why does Finn, for you, stand out above the rest?
For me, it's because you can do it, forget about it, and the professionals are working there for you. So really, you can just keep your money going into it and not really worry.
For us, for myself, it's just clarity. The way that we've built the app from ground up is kind of the opportunity. Yes, we've got so much more exciting things in the years to come to really help people. But right now in the beginning, it's simple. You download the app. You take a risk portfolio. We work with Oxford Risk. It puts you into low, medium, high. You choose one of your portfolios. You set up the direct debit. You can forget about it. You can check it every
done.
You can check it every single day if you're that person. You can check it every month or every year, whatever it may be. But the thing is, for us, it's about what worked for us personally when we started investing was just doing that exact same thing and doing it with something that you can show history from. So our larger fund, the statistics are there. We can prove it. Like, we don't have to worry about that. And at the end of the day, for us, about really focusing on Gen Z and actually the wider audience, because most people need to learn and be more educated about money is one thing. But the exciting thing for us is that growth. And we want to do everything to help people. We're about really kind of more we can give people, the better for us. Mm-hmm. And the first 1,000 people also get a bonus £50.
Oh, so sprinkle that one in.
So literally, if you've done £50 for your first 4 months, then that's what, a 25% return on your money straight away in the first 4 months. That's a winning bonus, isn't it?
Oh, no, it sounds like a win-win to me.
All right, just before we leave, because we're probably a little bit over time, I want to ask in one sentence, one thing that someone should know when it comes to investing, a little nugget if you can.
Oh, that's a... Oh, I love this question. Okay, so for me, it's quite simple. Compounding interest.
Say no more. Google it if you don't know what it means.
It's what makes you smile.
You know what? AJ's nailed it on the head. Google that, and that's all you need to know.
I think Einstein said it's the eighth wonder of the world. Apparently, I wasn't there when he said it because...
You if know. You look at Warren Buffett, he is just one pure example of compounding interest.
He should make that his middle name, shouldn't he?
From the age of 14 years old to however old he is now, look
on,
at his
on
stuff.
That note, yeah. Warren, compound interest Buffett. Yeah. Thank you very much. Anyway, AJ Curtis, thank you so much for joining.
No,
and if you
so
haven't checked
much.
Out Finn, go check
yeah,
him out.
Yeah, register your email online and then you'll get a nice little email from us.
Ah, voilà. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Joining me now, I have Claire Seal, who is a content creator and author. You might know her from the page My Frugal Year, which she started back in 2019. Anyway, Claire, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm really well.
Absolute pleasure. I'm excited to learn more about your journey. In particular, I believe My Frugal Year, if I have my facts correct, it started back in 2019. Now, what happened in 2019 that made you start a page called My Frugal Year?
I just reached a complete breaking point in my relationship with money. I think I was 29. I had been sort of working and earning for the best part of a decade. And I had my first son quite young by today's standards. I was 25. My husband was 24. I'd got married and had a second baby, and it was sort of when I towards the end of that second maternity leave that everything just seemed to fall apart. We had been accruing sort of small amounts of debt for years, just trying to keep up with like the cost of living. And it was nowhere near what it is now as well back then. And we'd accrued equivalent to my annual salary in credit card overdraft debt by the time I was 29. So I just remember having a phone call with my bank where they asked when I was going to be able to sort of come back within my overdraft limit. And I was like, oh, it's going to be the end of the month. This was, I think, the 14th of March. And the woman on the other end of the phone asked why. And I don't think I'd ever really asked myself that question. I just heard myself say, there's just no money left. And I think, you know, she was really then helpful. She refunded some charges, which brought me back within my limit. And I came off that phone call like knowing things had to change, but also maybe feeling like I could change things. And I'd felt so powerless for such a long time. I'd just been going along with the ride. So I did what any sane person would do. And I set up an anonymous Instagram account to sort of share all. And I used it as a diary. It was anonymous for a year. And then I sort of, I sort of had to because I published a book, but I came out and said, you know, this is me. And this has been my experience. But I was just met by loads of people who'd been terrified to talk about the mistakes that they'd made with money because, you know, we live in an age where frugality is really fetishized, but no one really wants to talk about the nitty gritty of what it means to have financial difficulty. Everyone's very uncomfortable talking about financial difficulty if you have privilege. So if you're earning well, but still struggling to keep up with your living costs, that there's quite a big taboo on that. It's been a really interesting 5 years. And, you know, we paid off the debt. We managed to buy a house. But Instagram won't let me change my handle.
Amazing. So that, it's stuck. Well, I think it's a great name. I mean, it stems to your roots, right? And how everything started. And I know you made a joke of it, but it's amazing that you were even anonymously confident sharing that. Because even I don't think that I would have that level of confidence to share, you know, all of the pitfalls, all of the struggles you're going through. And I suppose you probably don't even realize, you probably get a lot of messages, the amount of difference you've made to people that have seen that and realize, oh, I'm not the only one that does it like this. I'm not the only one that's struggling. And there is a way out of it. So, I mean, probably to say thank you, kind of, it's like thank you for your service kind of thing, because it's so important. These conversations aren't had. People don't open up and share their difficulties with money. What was one stat I saw recently? 1 in 3 people earning over 6 figures live paycheck to paycheck. I mean, You were speaking about the high earners not wanting to talk about their difficulties keeping up with their living expenses. There it is for you right there. Imagine earning 6 figures and not being able to keep hold of that paycheck at the end of a month. So it's far more common than people think, but far less common for people to talk about, like you do.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of sort of like sticking your neck out and sort of accepting that people, you know, I think there's loads of shame when it comes to money and financial difficulty. But I honestly think that that shame is really a symptom of the judgment that exists in society. I don't think that people are feeling ashamed for the sake of it. I think they're feeling ashamed because you can't really sort of open your phone or open a newspaper without seeing these huge judgments piled on people who've made mistakes with money. And I think it's acceptable for people to slag you off about being bad with money in a way that it might not be for like other mistakes that you might make or other, you know, sort of compulsive behaviors. For example, compulsive shopping is a massive problem, but it's sort of, yeah, I don't know. It's still in this zone where I think it's acceptable to heap judgment. I mean, literally today I've had an article be published talking about monthly costs of raising a family and just so many comments judging because I've shared openly what I spend month to month raising my family.
It's just like, you know, crazy nitpicking on like the little subcategories that mean a lot to you, but to them mean nothing. So they're like, how can you spend that? Honestly, anytime I share anything within my budget, that like, for example, I was speaking last week to someone and they were like, I was in debt, but I still wanted to pay for a cleaner. And the reason I did that was because, you know, I wanted to have time with my children and like to spend hours cleaning the house. I think that the amount I was spending on that was worth the time that I got back with my family. And she was saying the amount of judgment and hate she got. They were like, you're in debt and you're paying for a cleaner. Like, how stupid can you be? And she was like, how can you say that? Like, it's a completely personal judgment. And that, I feel like that's what you're sharing about when you are open with your money, there's always going to be someone out there that wants you to do it differently because that's how they do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what I want my community to be, and it has grown into a community, you know, I see so many people giving each other, you know, lifting each other up in the comments, you know, definitely outweighs the number of people who are hopping on there to tear me down. So it's fine. The balance is right at the moment. But, you know, I want it to be a community where people talk about and can learn how to like live the best life that they can with the money that they've got. Because we're, you know, I'm one person, it's not within my, you know, capabilities to make sure that there's economic justice and fairness across the world. Unfortunately, I'm really sorry to break it to everybody. But, you know, what I can do is provide a platform where maybe if I share something openly and back myself and don't sort of hide away in embarrassment or shame, that somebody else feels able to say, oh, actually, I'm in that situation, I'm struggling with that as well. And sort of bridge that gap between the people who need some help and advice and the help and advice that's available, because I think that's a massive problem when it comes to money.
I couldn't agree more. All right, Claire, we now would like some of the tips, the things that you did. I mean, you told us earlier that it was about an annual salary worth of debt that you were in back in 2019. You've clearly gotten yourself into a much better position today. So if you are someone that has that level of debt, maybe worse, maybe better, but still feeling that, like you mentioned, that anxiety, that shame about it, what's the first thing you can do to turn things around? And then maybe what are some other ideas that you can start considering to help you get from a position of, you know, debt to a position of control?
Yes, I mean, I think the first thing to do is to really be honest with yourself about whether the situation that you're in is manageable or not. Because if it isn't, if you're really struggling to keep up with repayments, then getting in touch with a debt charity like Step Change or Christians Against Poverty is the best thing that you can do. And they are so brilliant. They're a bit like a GP, like you're horribly embarrassed, but they hear this stuff all the time. And totally judgment-free, and they just can help you to make a plan. And everyone who I've spoken to who's gone through Step Change has said that, you know, the moment that they came off the phone, they just felt this huge weight shift off their shoulders. So there's that. But also what we did and what quite a lot of people want to do is they say, you know, sort of, I'm in this mess. It feels manageable for me to get out of it. It might take a long time, but I want to do this. So what you can do is, if you've got, especially if you've got multiple lenders, is you can phone your lenders and see if there's anything they're willing to do for you as a gesture of goodwill. So they might freeze interest for a while. That can really help you to bounce things back in the right direction. They might refund charges that have been applied to your account sort of maybe unfairly if you're in financial difficulty. So if you do that across all of the different places that you've got borrowing, then you can get a really nice sort of shunt back in the right direction. The second thing, and, you know, I'll say it until I'm blue in the face, is you've got to have a really realistic look at your budget. There isn't a magic bullet that's going to conjure up like an extra 500 quid a month. So have a realistic look at your budget, download all of your transactions, get your highlighters out, you know, color code everything. The first thing is to see where you can cut without losing value. Think about the money that you waste first, cut the waste first, but also try and ring fence some things that you do enjoy. And this is, I think, made the biggest difference to me, was that we did ring fence a couple of, you know, a little bit of money each month for enjoyment. And that is what stopped it from being like this sort of yo-yo diet budgeting that I see quite a lot of people do, where, you know, you really deprive yourself and then you fall off the wagon and you end up sort of back where you started. Mm-hmm. You've undermined your confidence this is something you can do. It's definitely not the one, that kind of really extreme budgeting. But do be honest with yourself, be thorough when you're doing it. make sure you're claiming what you're eligible for as well, especially if you're, you know, if you're a carer, a parent, if you're earning a low income. There's a brilliant organisation called Income Max, run by a guy called Lee Healy, who's awesome. I've seen him speak a couple of times. And their whole purpose is, you know, to help to sort of, you know, bridge that. There's 85 billion, I think, in benefits that go unclaimed each year. So to help people to claim what they're eligible for. And it might be that, you know, you've missed something and you don't need to struggle as much as you are struggling. And then it's just take it month by month and remember that the time's going to pass anyway. That's what I've repeated to myself so many times when it felt like the biggest slog. And it did take us 2 years to pay it all off. But I did sort of just repeat to myself that the time was going to pass anyway. And it did, you know, and I was 29 then, I'm nearly 35 now, and I'm still young, surprise. So, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for trying to be patient, and I'm not a very patient person, but just those small gains are what makes a massive difference overall.
That is, I mean, like, if we could just cut off a segment of the show right now and just send it to the entire country, that would be it. Because there was so much practical advice in there, not just mathematical, which was great as well. You know, the literal calling up someone and freezing interest rates or cutting and getting, you know, chargebacks on things that maybe you didn't need to spend in the first place, or the highlighter and getting rid of waste. But it was also the psychological aspect, the idea of being kind to yourself. You know, still, you can still spend money whilst you're on this journey, as long as it's in a deficit. As long as you're in a deficit, like, you're on the right track, right? And it's just making sure you're in the right direction. If your debt is shrinking, even if it's by, let's say, £1 a month, obviously you want the more the better, but you're going in the right direction. And then it's just time, right? Because ultimately it's deficit plus time equals getting yourself out of that position in the first place, which is really, absolutely, really great to hear.
Sorry, just to add to that, that if you're making all of the minimum repayments and you're just about managing, but you can't afford to pay any more, a really good tip is to just, instead of setting it to the minimum, set it to the amount that you're currently paying as the minimum, because as your minimum decreases, you'll still carry on paying the same amount that's affordable. And again, you'll be getting that deficit without, like, spending more. It's a really, really good thing to do.
I've never thought of that one before, but yeah, brilliant. If you just keep the absolute amount you're spending right now per month to pay it off, just do that continuously, right? That's basically what you're saying. Don't let it, like, decrease as your balance decreases.
Yeah.
I love that. So, I mean, what is your relationship like now with money? Because you've clearly got it. You said it took 2 years, but you got yourself out of the debt. You're now a homeowner, so you're clearly in a strong position. So what is that like? Obviously, the relationship at the beginning, not great. But today, how does it look?
I mean, it's much better than it was. I think that, you know, like anyone with anything, there are days where I feel like it needs work, and there are days when I feel really on top of it. And that's sort of just the way, I think it's one of those things where it's going to be a lifelong thing to manage that. I think money is a bit, again, it's a bit like food, in that quite a lot of us have a bit of a tense relationship with it, but you can't live completely without it. You can't go cold turkey on money. So I think the main difference is that now I really sort of see the money as a tool to build the life that I want for myself and my family, rather than seeing the money as, like, the object in itself. I'm definitely not scared of it anymore. So I think, like a lot of people who maybe have some money issues from growing up, I almost was allergic to having money in my bank account. Like, it had to, like, it had to go. I was working to, like, zero all the time. But I kind of started to preempt that by making sure that I was paying myself first, and money was going into first to debt and then into savings, so it wasn't in my, like, current account. But now I find it bearable to have money in there and not think, oh, like, what does that need to be spent on now immediately?
I love that. Well, Claire, thank you so much for jumping on today. Honestly, I feel like the person, anyone listening to this, is going to hear something relatable, but also practical advice to get them from a negative place to a positive place. And that's the difference we're trying to make on this show. So all I say is thank you and well done on your journey, and keep sharing the message because it's clearly making the world of good to a lot of people.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
No worries at all.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
The best of 2024.
On FUBAR Radio.
Can you introduce who you are and what your role is?
I'm Rachel Reeves and I'm Chancellor of the Exchequer.
I'd love to ask, how does someone become Chancellor of the Exchequer? What was it that inspired you to pursue this career?
Before I became a Member of Parliament, I worked in banking and financial services as an economist at the Bank of England and then in the private sector. But I've always been interested in politics. I joined the Labour Party when I was at secondary school because my sixth form was a couple of prefab huts in the playground. Our school library was turned into a classroom because there were more children than there was space. And as for textbooks, there were never enough to go around. So I've always been motivated about putting something back into society and achieving what I think are two sides of the same coin, economic growth and social justice. And you achieve that by making sure that everyone has the chance to fulfil their potential. So when I got the chance to stand for Parliament, I guess almost my dream job was to be Chancellor of the Exchequer. And that's what I'm doing today, and I've been doing for the last 80 days since I was appointed.
It's a pretty cool job to have. And I'd love to ask, for people that look at you and are inspired by your career, what's one tip you would say to someone that potentially wants to be a future Chancellor of the Exchequer?
I think that everybody should follow their dreams and aim high. You know, when I was at school, when I was growing up, my mum and dad would never have imagined that I was going to become a Bank of England economist, a Member of Parliament, certainly not Chancellor of the Exchequer. That wasn't what was normal in my family or my school. And so, I always took opportunities when they came my way. I worked hard and I believed that I could do it. And I guess I would just encourage all people, but particularly young women, because I'm the first ever woman to be Chancellor of the Exchequer, and the post has existed for 800 years.
Oh, wow.
Just to say to all young women and girls, there's no ceiling on your ambition. You can achieve whatever you want. Aim high, dream big, and you can realise your dreams too.
Wow, that's a pretty cool motto to live by, I suppose. And as you already know, I like to talk about financial education.
Yes.
On the internet. And perhaps looking back at any period of your life, what's one financial tip that you really carry through still today? Something that you really hold by that you wish you could share with other people?
Well, something that I will always remember and had a big influence on me was my mum and how she managed her finances. My mum and dad were both primary school teachers, so we weren't poor, certainly not, but we weren't well off, and my parents got divorced when I was quite young, and so there wasn't loads of money to go around. My mum had to be really careful with money, and every month when she'd got her bank statement, she would go through all of her receipts, because she kept them, and tick them off against the bank statement, because she didn't have money to spare. And always remember that. For my mum, the sums always had to add up. And I'm now Chancellor of the Exchequer, and I'm in charge of the public finances, but of course the public finances also have a real impact on people's family finances. And I will always think of people like my mum and people with less money than that, who always have to make their sums up, add up, and thinking about how as a government we can make it a little bit easier for ordinary working people to have a bit more money in their pockets to spend on the things that matter to them.
Brilliant. So what are your plans for the economy, especially in terms of helping working people?
Well, that is front and centre of the agenda of this new government, to bring growth back to our economy, to lift living standards for working people and ensure there are more good jobs paying decent wages in all parts of the country. Our economy has got a huge potential. I see it everywhere I go, with start-up and scale-up businesses, high street businesses giving new life to their local communities, from big brands who want to invest in Britain but haven't had the stability from government and policy these last few years. years. I know if we can bring investment back to Britain, we can bring growth back, and with growth comes higher wages that you can support a family on and save for the future, and also good jobs in your local area. That's what I want to achieve as Chancellor, ensuring that living standards improve and ensuring that people have access to good jobs paying decent wages.
I don't think we can talk about money and finances without also talking about housing. It's probably one of the most relevant topics when it comes to finances and the economy in general. And as a young person and speaking to many peers, and also being a financial educator and speaking to many young people on the internet, it's very evident that the idea of owning a property is becoming, and I feel like I've said this to you before, more of a dream than a reality. Now that you are in power and, you know, this is kind of your roadmap that you're building out, what are the plans to make housing more affordable for young people?
So the key thing is the mismatch at the moment between demand and supply. There's a lot of demand for housing, but there's not enough supply. We need to be building the homes that families, that young people need. And that's why we've made a commitment to build 1.5 million homes in this parliament. That's a massive ask. It's a huge step up from where we've been the last few years. But unless we get those homes built, we're going to have the level of home ownership continuing to decline, and more young people and families being priced out of being able to own their own home. But I know that home ownership for some people is going to feel a long way off for a long time to come, and so we need to fix other parts of the housing market as well. We want to build more social housing to give security for people in the social housing sector and give more people that opportunity, but we also need to fix the private rental market, which is so important for young people particularly, but increasingly actually for families and older people as well. And that's why we've made the commitment to end once and for all no-fault evictions and have stronger rules around what landlords can and can't do. I hope that that will give more security for people in the private rented sector that already exists, for example, in the social rented sector, and the security that you have from owning your own home.
Brilliant. I'd love to kind of like dive a little bit deeper into that, and specifically for first time buyers. Yeah. There are some policies that exist, some obviously stronger than others. Are there any policies that you're hoping to look at currently changing, or new ones that you're hoping to bring in to really assist that person from, like you mentioned, potentially they're in the place now where they're renting and then they're hopefully going to have more protection, but taking that leap to home ownership for the first time in their life?
Well, I think we need to do more to ensure that you don't have to rely on the bank of mum and dad to be able to buy your own home. You know, if you're lucky enough that your parents perhaps have some equity in their home or have some savings that they're willing to donate or lend to you, that's great. But there are a lot of young people, and I know in my constituency in Leeds, my parents don't have those sorts of resources to be able to help their kids. And that's why we're looking at things like a guarantor scheme to help more young people get on the housing ladder. But I think the most important thing of all is to build homes, because unless we're building homes, what we're going to find is that the prices continue to go up and up and up, and the number of people looking to buy their own home is not going to be met by the supply of homes available. And that's why we've brought back targets, for example, so local authorities can't just not build, they have to build. Of course, they can decide where that building takes place in their communities, but saying no all the time to new housing development just can't continue to be an option. It's why we've said that we will, whilst having a brownfields first approach to build in urban areas, that we will also look at those parts of the green belt that aren't green and aren't nature rich to ensure that we can meet our housing ambitions for young people and families. And it's why we're reforming the planning system to get it, make it easier for builders to build and to make it harder for the blockers to stop the development that we really, really need, including with new towns, which is something that we can replicate some of that success we had in the post-war period of building new towns, new communities for places and for people to live.
That's wonderful. And I have one final question, and I love asking this one, because earlier I asked you what's that one financial tip from your childhood or from a period of your life that you carry forward. But I want to flip it the other way around now. So now something, you said you've worked in finance, you're now Chancellor of the Exchequer. What's one thing that you've learned now, something that maybe, you know, a more recent lesson, that you would look back at a younger version of yourself and you would say, you should have known this one earlier. It really would have helped.
Gosh, that's a really great question. I guess sort of one of the things that I've had to grapple with since becoming Chancellor of the Exchequer is this sort of hole in the public finances. And some people have said to me, oh, because you've been honest about the state of the public finances, that has made people gloomy about the economy. Well, the alternative is not being honest about the scale of the challenge. And I've always believed that being honest and open and transparent is the best policy approach. And also, you shouldn't treat people like fools, and we should be open about the scale of the challenge, but then have a plan to fix it. And I'm not sure if this analogy exactly works, but I think people should be open and honest about their finances as well. And a lot of people I know in Britain do get into financial difficulty. The charity Step Change is based in Leeds, where I'm a member of parliament, and they do great work helping people who get into financial difficulty. But I think people should be open and honest about their finances and get help if you need it, because there are a lot of people who are struggling with debt and aren't seeking support and advice. And support and advice is there, and people who get into those difficult situations should get that advice to get out of a tricky situation.
I think the analogy worked really well, by the way. I think it works very well for what you were saying.
If there's a step change for for governments with £22 billion black holes, then that'd be great to know about.
That'd be a great charity to exist at this point in time. But no, I think you're so spot on, because a lot of people ignore their finances. They let things build up and up and up. And often I say to people that looking is one of the first steps to actually change your entire financial future. I would kind of echo everything you've just said. So thank you very much.
Well, it's great to meet you again. And last time we met, it was a couple of weeks before the general election when I was Shadow Chancellor. And it's really fantastic to continue to work with you now that I'm Chancellor of the Exchequer. And good luck in making sure that people, particularly young people, get access to financial tips, which I know you're providing.
Looking forward to the next interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We also like to answer some audience questions. Every week I ask you to DM us at That Money Show. Please, I beg you, give us those questions that you are too embarrassed to ask, because everyone thinks that, you know, I'm not going to ask that question because I really should know it. You know, I'm in my mid-20s, and how do I not know about what tax I need to pay? No one knows because no one's learned. Ask the question. And if you don't want to, just send us a DM and we can answer it. Ask it anonymously. And we've had a few questions from last week, and I will answer them here live because that is what we like to do at That Money Show. I'm going to start with this one right here. Polly has asked, I forgot to cancel my Disney Plus subscription and I can't afford the renewal cost. It's about 5 days since it's renewed. Could I cancel it and how? Polly, so number one, 5 days since. I believe with most purchases, even subscription renewals, you do kind of get that window. Definitely with normal purchases, you always get, I believe, 14 days to return it or get refunded on what you said, to kind of say that you don't want it and give it back, in other words. With a subscription renewal, it is a bit harder, I believe. But this is what I would tell you. Because most services these days, especially someone like Disney Plus, are so good with their customer service, if you just explain to them, get online, get in touch with their customer services, call them through the app, send them an email, tell them what's happened. I don't know how you might have missed the renewal warnings coming up, but to make it very clear that this is an affordability thing and it's just not something that you can afford right now, 9 times out of 10, they're going to refund you. It's just worth asking. It's so important. Don't just sit there sitting on your hands thinking there's nothing I can do now. It's too late. It's good that you've recognized it now so quickly. Obviously, if it was 300 days into the year, you might be a little bit late. 5 days in, I hope that 14-day renewal kind of post-payment refund policy still applies. But if it doesn't, the customer service should be good enough. And that happens with anything. If it's auto-renewed, I've done this so many times with places that said, we've warned you, I'm afraid we can't pay it back. I just email back, I'm really sorry, I can't afford it, I missed it. It was going to a different email. That's how I missed it in the first place. If that's the case, obviously don't lie. And I'm fairly certain I've never not got my money back. So there's a little bit of a piece of tip to you, Polly. And we've got another question that says, my contract is nearly up on the flat I'm renting and my landlord wants to increase my rent by nearly £200, which is ludicrous. Do you have any advice on how to approach this? Oh, I wish I did know more about renting. Number one, I would check your contract. So this is something key. Check if it says there's some policy about how much they can raise your rent by. Sometimes they're inflation linked. And right now, if it's inflation linked, it should only be about 3%. So if it's more than that, there's your case. Number two, I believe there are laws that make the lease, yourself, the person renting, have a few more power. So they can't just kick you out if you're going to be homeless and on the street. Something to be aware of, but please do just double check and speak to your council for some support. They'll have the answers that you need from there. I'm really sorry about that situation, though. I know it's bit shit. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Oh, I know, really, really sad. I should get an R sound effect there because it is really sad when we get to the end of that show. But I hope that you've learned something. I hope that you've enjoyed the show. As always, you can download the Fubar app to listen every single week live, and you can also catch us everywhere on social media to listen back to this show. So wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen to this entire show if you kind of jumped in halfway and you want to catch the rest of it. Or find us at That Money Show on social media. Yeah, hit us up. Let us know your questions. Thank you to all my guests. It was an incredible show. Thank you so much. We'll catch you back next week. I'm That Money Guy. This is That Money Show, and let's get better with money.